These days, cars are outfitted with all kinds of new features aimed at ensuring the safety of the people in them and the people outside them. So one would assume that the roads have never been less dangerous. One would be surprised, however, and wrong. A new report from the U.S. shows that more pedestrians are dying than ever before. Richard Retting is the author of the report and the safety director for Sam Schwartz Transportation Consultants. We reach Mr. Retting in Washington, D.C.
Mr. Retting, why are so many pedestrians dying on your roadways?
Well, we know a lot about how many are dying. We know a lot about the trend, which is extremely troubling and quite surprising. The why is elusive. We have theories. We have some data. But the basic factors that we normally would take into account, like the amount of driving, number of vehicle miles traveled, the population growth, the extent to which people provide data to the Census Bureau on how much walking they do to work, all of those typical factors don't account for an 11% increase in the number of pedestrian deaths. It simply doesn't add up.
How many people actually died last year? What's the number?
Okay, we're projecting, based on data provided for the first half of the year, about 6,000 pedestrian deaths, which would account for the largest number of pedestrian fatalities, the largest annual number in over 20 years. You'd have to go back to 1990 to find a time when that many people died on the road walking.
And it doesn't include the numbers of people who were injured, that wasn't a
not
fatal...
Not at all. There are thousands, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people who are injured at various levels of injury. Of course, there are serious injuries, and there are folks who have injuries that are not quite as serious. But getting hit by a car always introduces the chance of a serious injury because it takes so little impact for a vehicle to cause injury to a human.
Let's go through some of your theories as to why this increase. So what are some of the things you're looking at?
Taking into account that we're living in good economic times, the economy is doing well, unemployment rate has been lowered considerably over the last few years. So by that measure, historically, where the economy is doing well, traffic fatalities sadly go up. And that's simply a fact of life. It's almost unavoidable. If there's more economic progress, what it means is there are more people working, there are more people traveling, there's more discretionary income, more people going out at night and enjoying themselves and so on. Unfortunately, though, even those typical trends don't apply here because at best, we would expect to see a 2 or 3 or 4% increase in pedestrian deaths reflecting more travel, more activity, and so on. So something else is happening socially or otherwise that seems to be driving this increase. And the only data that I see that shows a surge in behavioral change is related to wireless data and cell phone use. Again, it's not to say there's a direct correlation between one and the other, but it's hard to argue, particularly when you are out in the driving environment, in the real world, getting away from the data, and we simply look at what's going on. Drivers have cell phones in their hands, on their dashboards, and that's a big source of distraction. It's also a distracting issue for pedestrians themselves.
Because the pedestrians are walking around with their cell phones, and they're reading their messages and texting as well. So both are distracted.
It's very distracting, and again, it's one factor among many. But all the other factors we've looked at simply don't have growth of this type. Unlike cell phone, wireless data, multimedia messaging, those are just growing at an enormous rate. Also, keeping in mind that about 75% of pedestrian fatalities occur at night in the dark, and less than 20% occur at intersections. So basically, people are getting killed for the most part in places where drivers may not expect them in the dark. And so somebody going 40 or 50 miles an hour in a car looking down at a phone for just a second or two may travel a significant distance and easily be in a situation where a pedestrian unexpectedly is present and gets hit by the car. Mm-hmm. We've been keeping track of pedestrian and traffic fatality data nationally for over 40 years, and there's never been in the history of that tracking this level of increase, let alone two consecutive years that have set records. So something's happening beyond the normal factors that drive traffic fatalities.
We know that alcohol is a factor in car accidents and in motorist fatalities. So is it the same with pedestrians? Is there a spike in alcohol-related pedestrian injuries?
It's a huge factor, but I can't say there's a spike because we've seen a persistent involvement of alcohol as a factor year after year. And we saw essentially the same results then as we're seeing decades later. So I wouldn't say there's a spike. It's a persistent problem. It's a big problem. It's something we're very deeply concerned about. But there isn't a surge. It's not a game-changing increase.
So what are you going to do about it? Is there a way to mitigate this?
Absolutely. We've been in a better place before. Just a few years ago, the numbers were substantially lower. And we would like to return to an environment in which the number of pedestrian fatalities is a fraction of what it is today. The report identifies very solid evidence-based measures that can be taken and should be aggressively implemented by state and local governments, particularly in regard to engineering, roadway design, and enforcement, traffic enforcement measures that directly address the pedestrian safety risk. This is a public health problem. Overall, about 40,000 people are killed in the U.S. Each year. That's equivalent to a fairly large airplane crashing every day and everybody on board dying day after day after day.
Well, I think that it's a cautionary tale for everyone who's out there, whether you're in a car or you're a pedestrian. And Mr. Redding, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was Richard Redding, the safety director for Sam Schwartz Transportation Consultants. We reached him in Washington, D.C. HWR, Toronto, Canada. HWR was Harold Wilbert Roswell, and Mr. Roswell was part of the Second World War forces to liberate the Netherlands from Nazi occupation. And during that mission, he carved his initials and birthplace into a tree near a small Dutch village. And moments later, Harold Wilbert Roswell was shot by a German sniper. And almost 70 years later, Ernst Arbau discovered that carving. This morning, Mr. Arbau spoke to Matt Galloway of CBC Toronto's Metro Morning about what he has learned about the Canadian soldier.
How did you know initially that HWR Toronto, Canada, that was carved by a Canadian soldier?
Well, that's a very good question. The answer to it is very simple. Canadians do not come to our village. there are other trees in the same woodland with carvings with a date on it, basically 1938, 1939. So you can see that the age is just about the same time.
And so having seen the initials and having started to do a little bit of digging, what did you learn about who the soldier was that carved that into the tree?
Well, after a negative response from a few of the Canadian authorities, I entered the initials, HWR, into the database for the Commonwealth Graves Commission, who maintain all the graves for the soldiers who had been killed in the Second World War. And they have a lovely database, very good. So I entered the initials, I entered Toronto, and then it popped up with a name, Harold Wilbert Roswell.
And who was he?
He was a young lad. He was 17 years old when he joined the army. He lied about, or rather, he misrepresented his age. From what I've learned from his family since then, he was a very joyful lad, very gregarious, I think the word is, and basically just a nice lad.
What an incredible story. Why would you want to put all the work into trying to track this down?
Really, when I started, it was just a matter of, well, let's see if we can find a veteran. That would be a lovely thing to bring him to the Netherlands. And then when I found out that he'd been killed, and when I learned a little bit more about his story, I thought, this is a story I must share with people. Because his own little story, how he joined up, how he was underage when he went into the army, and then how he did his training first in Niagara and later in British Columbia, and then how he was shipped off to the United Kingdom and from there to Normandy and all the way almost to the end of the war. Mm. That's a story that represents the war effort of all the Canadian boys. So his story is a wider story. So by sharing his story, I'm telling the story of the liberators of the Netherlands.
That was Ernst Arbau, a Dutch journalist who is writing a book about Canadian soldiers who fought in the Netherlands. He was speaking with Matt Galloway, host of CBC Toronto's Metro Morning. This week, a new youth movement came suddenly to life. It is made up mostly of 12 to 25-year-olds. There are some people older than that. What they have in common is a valid international student ID card and a beef with Via Rail. The beef involves Via's offer of unlimited summer youth rail passes this year as part of Canada's 150th birthday celebration. Carly Crawford is one of the malcontents. We reached her in Ottawa.
Carly, how did you hear about this pass that Via Rail had?
I actually just heard about the pass through Facebook. It was trending on Facebook, and then it was also trending on Twitter.
And what did you think when you heard that there was a chance to buy this ticket?
I thought, what an incredible opportunity to travel to Vancouver for only $150 rather than by plane.
And so, what did you do?
I went online and I tried to buy a ticket, but unfortunately the website was down due to technical difficulties. I phoned Via Rail and I was on hold with them for about 32 minutes. And then I finally got through to an agent and I asked how many tickets there were. He said that they were unlimited. I asked if I could buy a ticket through the phone. He said that he could not process my payment due to his system on the other side. So I said, okay, well, do you know when the issue will be down, the technical difficulties? And he mentioned that it'll probably be fixed in the next 24 to 48 hours, but I shouldn't worry since there is an unlimited amount of passes.
What was your next move then?
My next move was I was in Toronto and I was coming back to Ottawa yesterday, and I didn't really think anything of it. And then I remembered my conversation that I had with him earlier, and I checked on the website to buy one of the unlimited passes, thinking that it would be a breeze. And I noticed that there was only now 1,867 tickets that were being given away, which was really disappointing because I was under the impression that there was an unlimited amount and I didn't need to rush to buy a ticket.
Were you able to get one? Did you call again?
Unfortunately, not. I called again. I called like almost 200 times. I called. I never could get through. The line was always busy. So I decided to maybe, like, call a taxi and check if the Ottawa Via Rail station would be open around midnight. So I hopped into a cab last night, went to the Ottawa Via Rail station. It was closed. Came back, finally got through on a line. However, they told me that, no agent would be picking up the phone until 7 a.m. the next morning. And by the time I set my alarm to call back around 6:40 to get through, all the tickets were already sold out.
So how many, you called nearly 200 times, like the same phone number?
I called many phone numbers. I went a little overboard. So I called the Quebec number. I called the Moncton number. I called their 1-800 number that they have on their website. And then I also called the hearing impaired number just because I wanted to get through to absolutely any way that I could. I was really determined to get a ticket, but unfortunately every single line was busy.
Who finally told you that there were only 1,867 tickets available and they were gone?
The Via Rail Twitter account.
If you had been able to get through when you first tried, if you'd been able to buy a ticket, you would have had one.
Exactly, which is why I'm so disappointed, because if the agent that I spoke to yesterday in the morning, when I asked him if I could buy a ticket, and he said that I could, then I would have had one today. But unfortunately, I was obviously not informed, and neither was he, so he told me that he couldn't process the ticket. Yet they were advertising afterwards that you could buy a ticket online or by phone.
It sounds very chaotic.
It is very chaotic.
They say that they've always said that there are only 1,867 tickets on offer. So that you just had that one verbal communication that said that there was unlimited, right?
I had that one verbal for my personal experience, but there was also a tweet made by Via Rail that said there was an unlimited amount as well.
Uh-huh. Do you think they should offer more tickets?
I think so. I think they should offer tickets, maybe do a contest this time, because obviously way too many people are on their website and it just crashes and you can't get a hold of anyone when you try to phone them. Canada is a really big country, so it's a little tough when everyone's trying to get through to one person or one company, I would say. But I think doing a contest would be fine, maybe giving out like another 2017 tickets because of the year that we're in would be cool.
And are you still planning to go out west?
Yeah, absolutely. I will probably fly. Maybe I'll take my own little road trip. Who knows? But I will definitely make my way out west this summer, even though I won't be taking the Via Rail.
And what would it cost you if you were to buy a ticket to go out west on the train?
On a train, I believe it's around $500 to $600. And by plane, it's about $900 to $1,000.
But you're not going to be taking a train out west?
No, I won't be taking a train out west. I think I would, for 4 nights and 3 days from Toronto to Vancouver, that's a long time to sit on a train. I definitely would have done it for the cost of $150 to see all of across Canada. It would be absolutely beautiful. But due to my also experience with Via Rail, I think I'd prefer to just go with Air Canada.
Well, having done that trip, I'll tell you, it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. You've done it?
Yeah, I've done it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I bet it's beautiful to see. But I don't know. I'm just a little tainted by it, I think, at the moment.
All right. We'll see if we can get some answers, Carly. I appreciate speaking with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for all your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Carly Crawford is a student at Carleton University. We reached her in Ottawa. Via Rail has issued a statement on this story. The company says that in the end, it increased the number of youth passes it sold to 4,000 due to overwhelming demand. It says they sold out at 3 a.m. this morning. And there is more on this story on our website, cbc.ca/AIH. Do you have a reaction when I say the phrase climate change? Would you describe that reaction as visceral? Now, I'm going to guess that most of you are saying yes. Now, it's hard not to feel queasy when you hear a phrase that triggers thoughts of rising sea levels, rising temperatures, extreme weather, and widespread species extinction. Rick Perry feels your pain. Well, at least he feels his own pain, and that is why he has reportedly banned that phrase, climate change, as well as the phrases emissions reduction and Paris Agreement from use around the office. And that's kind of problematic, because the office, in this case, is the International Climate Office of the U.S. Department of Energy, which Mr. Perry runs. A source told Politico that a supervisor in the department issued the restrictions this week, because, among other reasons, those phrases cause a, quote, visceral reaction, unquote, in Mr. Perry and his colleagues at the top. Now, a spokesperson for the Energy Department denied any words or phrases had been banned. A source elsewhere in the department said there wasn't an official ban, but as Politico reports, quote, there was a general sense that it's better to avoid certain hot-button terms in favor of words like jobs and infrastructure. Now look, I get it. Some people have a visceral reaction to the word moist, and they just say damp instead, and it makes no difference. They're the same thing. But jobs and infrastructure is not a synonym for climate change. So there may be a chance that you are experiencing a visceral reaction to Rick Perry's visceral reaction. But before you start yelling at your radio, let me caution you, watch your language.